And someone is asking, what is the importance of the energy of synthesis in this work of learning? Because so many things have been revealed. In this new age of Aquarius, the energy of synthesis is very important. So this energy of synthesis is beginning to be manifested. So now we as humanity will have a greater capacity for synthesis. So in time we will be able to receive more knowledge because we will be able to synthesize it. This is an energy of Aquarius that is approaching, that is becoming instated, or for some it is already very much present. And someone is asking about transmutation. Is transmutation included in initiation? Well, what we call initiation is an expansion of consciousness beyond what is normal, beyond normal consciousness. So when our consciousness expands in a special way, in a more in-depth way, to which humanity in general has not yet opened up. So here we have an initiation. And the person is asking if it is necessary to undergo transmutation before initiation, before we have a special and unusual expansion of consciousness, before we become able to enter certain levels of reality that humanity in general has not yet comprehended. It is necessary for our energies to have been greatly purified. It is necessary for a lot of transformation to have occurred in our being. And it is also necessary for transmutation to have occurred in our energies. Transmutation in the sense of our energies being purified, being uplifted, and in certain cases, our energies or our rays to even be changed. This is not a transmutation of souls. This is not a transmutation of monads. But it is a deeper transformation in the matter of our bodies. This does have to happen. This is why transmutation, in all its senses, is one of the main points of our work. All our books, or almost all our books, have transmutation as a central issue, because this is a law that is to be instated. It is a higher law that should be implanted in humanity, and that in time could make it possible for humanity to transcend death, to transcend physical birth by means of transmutation. And this is something that is basic and foremost in our work. Now, of course, this was not discovered today. This has been known for a long time, since the beginning. And you can see that this has been stated in many different ways. It has been expounded in many different ways, but this is not told for the first time in the book Signs of Contact. It has been described in many different ways throughout the ages. And in this book, Calling Humanity, in the introduction, around page 10, second paragraph, you have at least four ways to talk about this, to talk about transmutation. There you have the form used by the person who wrote the introduction, who regards this as a soul exchange. One soul leaves and another comes in, the way it happened with her. Now, Blavatsky, Steiner, and the Tibetan, through Alice Bailey, also spoke of this, but in other ways. So, in the introduction to Calling Humanity, you have these four ways, because the author of that introduction realized that transmutation here is a key issue. In this work, it is a central point. So Blavatsky referred to this when, in one of her later works, when she said that another body was being prepared for her so that she could use it when the time came to leave the body she was in. So it was the way she found to express this without using the word transmutation and without saying that she was exchanged, but a body was being prepared for her to inhabit when she would have to leave her body. Now, Rudolf Steiner said in one of his books that in a dead faint, a person's inner being could leave its body and another inner being could take over that body. He said this in another way, in a more expanded way. And Alice Bailey spoke of this, calling it divine obsession. And this is far less clear than the other forms, because obsession can be interpreted in many other ways. But since it was divine, it was a different obsession. It was a positive obsession. Except that in obsession, the being who is there in the body does not have to leave. So here Alice Bailey was really not clear, even though she was speaking about this, about a body that can be inhabited by another within a certain law. So we have every opportunity to get to know this subject and not to consider this subject as something that is very special, very different, is exotic. It is very, very important for this law to come down, to be implanted, because this will make it possible for many evolved souls to come here, to do their work and then to leave, without having to stay here for so many decades, without having to go through periods of gestation and of adolescence and of childhood, all these things that you know, until the being finds himself or finds herself again. So it is very important for this law to become more present here, because this will make it easier for many evolved souls, many evolved beings to come to Earth. Because in the current situation, with the law of physical birth, it becomes quite unbearable for certain souls to come to Earth, because there are so many risks involved and so much time taken up at the disposal of this incarnated life in order to perhaps fulfill a quick task of 2 or 3 years or whatever time, that this makes the incarnation of certain advanced souls almost impossible. And since the surface of the earth needs to receive advanced souls, it needs more advanced beings to act as leaven in the dough, to be the salt of the earth. So it is necessary for many more evolved souls to come down. This is one way, because then the soul doesn't have to spend decades incarnated. It doesn't have to spend many years incarnated. It remains incarnated only during the period in which the task is carried out. The soul comes down when it is time to begin the task and transmute when the task is fulfilled. So it is very important for us to feel at ease with this subject, for us to feel totally comfortable. This is very important because we can help this humanity become open to these new circumstances, which cause significant changes in the current norms and structures. So this phase that we called the phase of revelation, this phase that began in 1975, this phase clearly introduces the law of transmutation. So this comes through very clearly, and we should keep it close in our hearts. And someone says that as he seeks unity with his inner being, it seems that his struggles only increase, his inner struggles. When we are on this quest, our struggles do not keep on increasing the whole time. They increase in stages. Because while we are seeking this inner consciousness, going deeper into other levels of consciousness, and when we come closer to this inner self, during this process of drawing near, we go through several stages to get there. And when we get closer there, we have other stages to go through. For example, there are some phases in which we draw near to our inner self through intense inner activity. Very intense. We feel this activity. We feel, we perceive that something is happening. When we are in this phase of feeling, this inner activity, this inwardness, everything is fine, then suddenly this phase comes to an end. And this drawing close, this activity goes through a period of rest. Here's where the person's psychological problems begin. I've stopped, I'm standing still, nothing is happening to me. Because this is a rest period. It happens, but in another way. It goes on happening without the person realizing it. It goes on happening without leaving the same impression of inner activity. This is one phase of the same process. There's really nothing to it. It doesn't mean the process has been interrupted. It doesn't mean this. It is just a stage after a period of intense activity, of great awareness, that the work is being done, comes a period of rest. And in this period of rest, a phase of struggles can begin to take place, of inner struggles, of the individual struggle to understand that process. A struggle, a conflict can come about. In going through these phases, especially in the phase of the rest period and in the phase of the struggles, one can see if the individual is closer or farther away from the center by the way he or she copes with this phase, if the individual is prepared to some degree. Because if he or she is not yet prepared, he or she will suffer greatly with the period of rest, because the person will then think nothing is happening, and this means that the person is not really prepared for this. And it is by grace that he or she is being led. But if the person is totally prepared, he or she will perceive this phase of a rest and will go through the dark night, will go through this period of absence of understanding, and all very tranquilly. And also, there are none of these struggles. There are no struggles because he or she knows perfectly well that this process is unknown to him or to her, because it had never been experienced before, and it is the first time it is being lived through. So it is a process that is not really well known, and it is a process that can come to a point that everything is incomprehensible to the person, to the point that the person may feel that he or she is doing something wrong. But all this is a part of the journey. Now, what we should keep in mind is that when we begin to experience these things, when these things begin to show up in us, especially during the period of rest, the period in which nothing seems to be happening, or the period of some struggle that might be taking place between our forces that have not yet been totally transmuted, and the energies that are found there. So here a struggle takes place. And as you approach these centers of consciousness, you contact energies that you had never contacted before. And certain forces in you might not be prepared to become attuned with those. Struggles between forces, struggles of energies, real struggles. The person's consciousness might even be at peace with that, but the forces and the energies might not, because they have to adapt to a new situation. And this has to be very clear to us, so that when these processes begin, when these processes are underway, we will recall that we have to live an outer life. And it is not very good, not very harmonious for these conflictual processes to reflect on this outer life. So this is a very basic preparation in the field of service that we will have to carry out. Because we can undergo all these processes, we can live all these stages, including the period of rest, the period of divergence amongst forces, without letting it affect the balance of our outer life. These things are not to be exposed. These things are not to reflect on our outer life. And our outer life should flow in such a way that nothing of this is happening there. This is to remain between our consciousness and our inner work. Our outer life should not receive any impact of this, not the least sign of this. Unless it is a positive sign, then the soul itself will take care of providing it. But if those who are in this process begin to show external signs of a period of rest, of a period of conflict, if this begins to reflect on a person's outer life, this will slow down the person's process of inner growth. It will slow down this process of unification. So this process of unification can be intensified. It can even become much more vitalized if the person has found the ability, if the person has found the way to not allow the crises of this journey, of this pathway, to show through, unless these crises could be useful for one person or another as information, or could be useful to someone or other as a clue for someone to begin to prepare for it. But in general, the being who is in this process of unification, the being who is following this quest, this being should be very attentive to this point in order to further the process, in order to speed up the process, because anything that happens during the process, which is quite natural, any moment of abandonment, any moment of not being understood, any moment of conflict between the person and his or her present consciousness and what is happening within, this the person must keep to himself or herself. This is not to be exposed, otherwise this will retard the other person's process. Because if the other person has to take a stand, if the other person has to make a choice, if the other person has to make a decision, and if he or she notices the one who is engaged in unification appears to be a sufferer, to be a wall of lamentations, this is not going to help the other person. The person will question, is this spiritual life? Is this the spiritual path? Is it what the person is manifesting? Do you see that there are some things in the process that are real, that are valid, that are things that we all have to live, but these pertaining to that individual's phase of evolution, this ought not to be projected on those individuals who have not yet reached that point of the process. They are preparing to reach that point of the process. And when it comes, they ask themselves, how far is this going to go? What am I getting into? This happens because it is guided from inner levels. And like it or not, it will happen. But all this produces a rhythm that is more cumbersome, a rhythm that is much slower, in what could be clearer, could be simpler and much purer. All in all, we would have to learn to live with this inner process, not only when it gives us all the positive signs of what is going on, but we would also have to learn to live with this as harmoniously and as silently as possible, and with a lot of tranquility, when the process gives us no sign whatsoever of what is going on, or when we notice some conflict among forces and energies along the path. Here we have to keep in mind that all this is to be lived with the same tranquility. All these phases, all these stages, which are all very different, they are not the same, but all this has to be lived with the same tranquility and with the same harmony within the same law of silence. Otherwise, a process like this that could even be relatively quick, because the person has all the conditions for this to happen, but perhaps what could be lacking would be this even-temperedness towards what is taking place with him or her. What is lacking is this ability to not be carried away, to not go around externalizing one's crises, to not express externally the details of one's crisis, of the stages that one is experiencing, because this is not going to help those who have not yet lived this and those who are trying to reach an understanding through this. This does not mean we are trying to hide things from others. It does not mean that we are trying to hide something under a mask. No. It is simply a question of the law of silence. It is a question of dealing with things skillfully and of not uselessly and unnecessarily projecting something on others ahead of time, something that the person will live through, but for which he or she is not yet or might not yet be prepared. Now, this is no secret. It's not forbidden to manifest it when it is supposed to be manifested. But this is only one or another case. These are special cases, and we should have the discernment to perceive when this is to be externalized or not. So those who are following this path should not have ups and downs in behavior or reactions or any of this. Those who are treading the path should find equilibrium and harmony and remain stable there most of the time. And someone has asked us to sum up something about instruction, something that is not very clear to her. When we work with instruction, when we are giving the teaching, it's not a question of offering ready-made solutions to the person who is receiving the teaching, to the person who is learning. Teaching includes a dimension that is not for you to present ready-made solutions on a platter already clarified for the person, but to help the person to gradually discover things. So if some teaching is taking place in a certain sense, in a certain direction, one gives that hint, one gives that essential information, one gives the keys, but one does not take the keys and open the doors. The person receives the keys, then looks for the lock and opens the doors. Do you see what we mean? It's not for you to open the door for the person. You hand the keys over to the person. And once the person has the keys, he or she is able to go to the door and open it. The person himself or herself should do this. This is an example that can be applied to whatever information we are to give. And another thing that we should do when providing someone with spiritual teaching, besides giving the key and not opening the door, and letting the person open the door on his or her own, is for the person to become aware that as he or she follows the path, the probability of error will decrease. And as the person moves along the path, there will be less and less mistakes. But the mistakes will be more subtle and more serious than when there were many mistakes. The person has to count on this happening. So the probability of error decreases because we have already learned so many things. But the mistakes are then more subtle. And in a certain sense, the mistakes we make may be more significant than the first mistakes. And we have to recognize this. And our work is to decrease our probability of error more and more. We have to lessen our probability of error. That is, we have to make less mistakes, but we have to be aware that each mistake is momentous when compared to the former mistakes, because everything becomes more subtle, and so it takes on greater significance for us in our consciousness. And we should know this, because it's when this probability of error begins to decrease, until the mistakes finally become more subtle, when this probability of error begins to decrease substantially, this is when we begin to make conscious contact with the hierarchy, and not while we are still making the usual mistakes, while we are making the same mistakes as everyone else. It's when this probability of error begins to decrease and we become aware that it should go on decreasing even further, we have to make an effort for this to decrease even more, even though we might know within ourselves that it is impossible to make no mistakes whatsoever during these stages. But we have to make an effort to decrease this probability. And as we attempt to do this, and the proportion of errors gets smaller, this is when our contact with the hierarchy begins. And we may not be aware of it. It may be an unconscious contact, a deeply inward contact, which we know nothing about. But we know that this contact does exist. We are aware that this contact exists. And we begin to be aware of this contact when the time comes for us to make certain inner connections. Not before, because in our contact with the hierarchy, we receive certain impulses that we had never received before. We have certain impulses that make it possible for us to form connections that we had not yet been able to form, and to form these new connections with these contacts means that a new energy flows within us, an energy that we had not yet known. We perceive that this is happening because our capacity to observe increases greatly. You begin to perceive things in yourselves and in others and in events. You begin to have a much more acute sense of observation. You begin to perceive much more. So with this circulation of this new energy that flows from impulses coming from the hierarchy, you begin to be a much more precise observer. And this is where one of the greatest tests come in, because you begin to notice things that you were not aware of before. You see things, especially in others, that you did not see before. And this is the test to see if you will criticize that person, to see if you will judge that person because of what you are noticing. So these are very subtle tests. You can just imagine how many times we fail here on this pathway. How often, when you realize it, you are already judging what you noticed in the other person. But one's evolution of consciousness makes this sense of observation become more and more acute, and it makes this perception become more and more perfect. And you are to develop the ability not to criticize, not to comment, not to categorize what happens within your systems of understanding things. This is really a very subtle test. And then when you go through this test of observing without judging the individual, of not criticizing him or her, when you reach this point, it is precisely at this point that you can begin to receive higher instruction, not before. Before this happens, you can receive the kind of instruction that is included in the general teaching. But special instruction, instruction that does not exist on the outside, instruction that is not given in any school out there, this you will only begin to receive, this level of instruction, when you undergo this test. So this test that has been experienced in time, will make the new influx within you become more than the energy of the hierarchy. But energies of the entire solar system will begin to flow in you. So here, to criticize, to judge, to assess someone else or something, all this should no longer exist. Because if this has not yet come to an end, any instruction, any instructive energy of knowledge, of wisdom that might be extraterrestrial, that might come from some more evolved planet or some more evolved humanity, in keeping with some more evolved human being, a higher human being, in no way can this come through, in no way can this be brought in. This begins to circulate in us, it begins to circulate in our inner management, and it would turn into a real pandemonium if we had not previously let go of this tendency to criticize, to judge, to categorize. Because what would happen to us with all this new inflow circulating in us, with all those small reactions of forces that could be there right now? You have to watch all this happening to you, and then non-judgment, non-criticism should have already become well established in you. Otherwise, you will not be able to undergo this process. You will not be able to bear the confrontation between what you are or you are becoming and what you were up to now. You will not be able to bear this confrontation if you have not lost this tendency to criticize, this tendency to judge, and if you haven't yet learned to observe with impartiality, without forming any opinion whatsoever. You have to notice just to know, and that's all, nothing more. These are the points that have come to mind to offer you at this time. Because if you notice something, you must be learning something there. It's a learning experience for you. So you are observing. The other person is serving you by providing what can be observed. This person is rendering you service. So we cannot recompense this service with criticism. We cannot give judgment in return for this, because you observe something in the other person, and if you noticed it, It is present in you as well. You never saw it in yourself, but now you are seeing it in someone else because it is easier to see in someone else. It is more evident. So by higher law, you lose the right to be able to observe, because to observe doesn't mean to judge someone. To observe is to see what is in you as well. And when this is out in the open, you can work on it better. Because when you notice something in someone else, work on that same thing in yourself, even if you think it's not there in you. But if you saw it in someone else, it is in you too. By doing this, we can take many shortcuts.